This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for IT professionals. For more information and to download other shows, visit ciaops.podbean.com. This is episode 13 with Lee Hicken and is sponsored by Applied Marketing Technologies, the leaders in the Australian market for customer relationship management and small business networks. Visit them on the web at www.amt.com.au. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and today I'm joined by Lee Hicken from Microsoft Australia. Lee, morning.
Good morning, Robert. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Like I said, we're obviously in a bit of a Christmas wind down, but we appreciate your time coming along today and letting us know a bit about the Microsoft Online Services offering, particularly around the Office 365. But before we dive into that, I think that all our listeners would like to get a bit of background on yourself and the role that you play within Microsoft. So if you can just give us a brief overview of yourself and obviously what role you fulfill at Microsoft, that'd be great.
For sure, no problem at all. And thanks for the opportunity, Robert, and Merry Christmas. So look, my name is, as you said, Lee Hicken. I'm a technical specialist here at Microsoft in Australia. I've been with Microsoft for 5 years now, focused predominantly in the sort of pre-sales market. And the current role I hold and have done for the last 2 years now is the technical specialist for our online services platform. So as you pointed out, that really encompasses what is widely known as BPOS, our Business Productivity Online Suite, evolving into Office 365. And the technologies that sit within that, which we're going to get into some more detail on. But in addition to that, it's really the role is around the technical capabilities of the overall solution, the integration of it, the migration to it, and the platform itself.
Okay. Oh, that's great. So you spoke, obviously, we'll kick off our discussion here on the BPOS side of things. So can you give us a bit of a background on BPOS, yes. How long it's been running, what it encompasses, and you know the success Microsoft's found with it since the it's been implemented?
For sure, yeah. Okay, look, I'll try and keep it brief because it's got a fairly long and colourful history. But as many of you probably know, it started out its life as a purely dedicated platform, very much a specific set of infrastructure built for a set of customers. And what we quickly realized is that BPOS had a future, or the Business Productivity Online Suite, and we should probably stop using that terminology because I know acronyms are never good. But the Business Suite, which was Exchange, SharePoint, Office Communication Server, and Live Meeting at the time, we saw a need for that to be a platform that could be delivered to a number of different users in a multi-user, multi-tenant environment. And so about 4 years ago is when BPOS as a product started to evolve. It hit the market here in Australia probably about 2 years ago now, and in association with our partners here, Telstra, we took to market the product. And really, it was a product that was targeted at the SMB market. Let's make no bones about that. It was always a product that was aimed at delivering the best of Microsoft's Business Productivity Suite to a market segment that typically either would not have been in the marketplace to either afford everything or have the time to dedicate to build out the infrastructure. So we're offering that as a sort of a la carte menu of choose the products you want. Now in the 2 years it's been to market, we saw a relatively slow ramp up. Certainly as we got to understand Telstra and Telstra got to understand Microsoft and we all got to understand the market space. But what's been amazing, Robert, has been just the huge acceleration in ramp-up. I mean, the massive take-up we've seen in the SMB space. Last count, and rough figures here, we were around between 800 to 900 distinct customers in Australia who have bought this product in 2 years and growing at an exponential rate. So each month we're just seeing a significant amount of customers coming on. But what's really interesting in that number base is of all those customers that have bought this, there are certainly some customers at the top end in the multi-thousands and tens of thousands of seats, but in the low end, we've got masses. A good 70% of that would be in what we consider to be the SMB market, that anywhere between 0 and 150, 200 seats sort of size of organization. So massive ramp up in the SMB market and continue to grow that with what we've seen the lineup in Office 365 as well.
Okay, so just the sort of the last thing on the BPOS side of it before we move to the the rebranded Office 365 is, can you just give us a brief outline of what the online services currently provide for a customer. So specifics around, you know, exactly the products and the, you know, the services. And then also, can you give us a bit of a background of what's in it for the traditional reseller that's perhaps moving from an infrastructure base but still wants to, you know, look after their customers and provide services? So what's in it for customers and what's in it for resellers at this point in time?
Okay, that's good. Good couple of points. Correct me if I get off track a bit on this one. So, in terms of the customer side of things, look, it's a fairly straightforward piece. I think this is the easiest message because the product consists of Exchange, SharePoint, as it is right now, Live Meeting, and OCS. And it's not really the value of those individual products that is the real value point of BPOS. It's the fact that it's a product that you can buy that enables you to have all four of those products built out in a large-scale data center, fully integrated, working and operating together, and deployed in what will be considered, I guess, best practice model. And you can consume it at a single seat type price, you know, to the point where through our relationship with Telstra here in Australia, locally and worldwide, through other models, you can essentially just buy a single seat of our suite and get access to the best that Exchange offers, the best that SharePoint offers, and OCS, and so on. So it's really, you know, from a customer's value perspective, and of course, you can buy individually each of those products as well. So you could just simply look to consume some SharePoint in the cloud, but to keep your mail on premise, you know, and obviously email is the great the great attractor of people to this service. You know, the idea that I can get my mail hosted, I can still have Exchange as a platform. I don't have to drop down to a POP3 or, you know, a sort of an IMAP experience. I can get the full rich Exchange experience without having to deploy Exchange Server, without having to worry about the infrastructure behind that. So from a customer's perspective, it really is about initially, I guess, it manifests itself as a cost point benefit. It's how to get this services platform at a cost point. But what it often transpires into is, I just want to get mail, but when I see a little bit of what OCS does, or I see what SharePoint could deliver for me, or I add in a bit of Live Meeting, it starts to really really expand out the opportunity and the value of the platform. And the price point often comes out in line with what people have typically been paying for a hosted mailbox alone in the past. So I think for customers, it's really a value proposition around just, you know, getting access to the technology, and also, of course, you know, the price point that you can deliver that at. From the reseller's perspective and from the partner market, look, I want to be perfectly honest with you, Robert. That's been a challenging part of this discussion, and I think we've reached a point now where we understand a little bit more about how that value can be best prescribed into that market space. But because on one side of it, you know, as a reseller of Microsoft products in the SMB space, someone who's been essentially making their bread and butter out of building out and selling infrastructure based on Microsoft technologies, what it would appear to be on the surface is, you know, some of that business is taken away from you. You know, you're no longer going to have to ship a box and deploy it, configure it, set it up, and get it tweaked just to what that customer wants. And there's no more of that sort of hardware inventory passing through the business. And there's a perception that there's no more requirement for you to manage this service because Microsoft's managing it. And some of that is largely true. Look, the reality is customers don't want to be managing and owning hardware anymore. And the reality of the situation with the resellers is customers are getting smarter to the fact that they don't really want to spend the kind of money that they have been spending in the past for somebody else to manage these things when all they see it as and all they use out of it is this sort of very basic idea of mail and so on. So from the reseller's model, yeah, look, hardware is a piece of this that changes. There's no longer a requirement for some of the hardware infrastructure. But let's bear in mind that the BPOS Office 365 platform is purely about the productivity tools and not about core infrastructure. We're talking about domains, directories, we're talking about file and print services and anything on-premise that is unique to that business. These things still remain, and that's still a value proposition for resellers out there. But in terms of the BPOS piece itself, what this does mean is it can change the dynamics of your business. So whilst you're not pushing hardware and delivering unique bespoke solutions to all your customers, what you do have now is the ability to, first of all, to scale. So you have an opportunity now to push a lot of functionality back to Telstra or Microsoft in terms of support, maintenance, and availability of the service. And that with that responsibility, hopefully comes back some sleep for the guys that have to use to get the calls at midnight for machines that have gone down. But you still got an Exchange infrastructure that you're managing on behalf of that customer. You still have all that infrastructure that the customer is going to need to utilize. And so, you know, as a reseller, you still have a value add to be as a part of that delivery chain and a part of that infrastructure chain that is there to help the customer migrate to online services, help the customer manage an online services engagement and relationship with Microsoft. And we're seeing many, many resellers finding a real niche for themselves, either in and around providing a support buffer to that service, or more importantly, and probably I think a better value proposition, is adding in additional services and starting to build out a really strong portfolio around other technologies that might fold into that platform beyond just the, hey, I can deliver you an exchange server. Because I think the reality of the market is people are realizing that purely delivering mail services is not a value prop anymore, and people want more out of that infrastructure, more out of that technology. So it's been a long road, and I think we're getting much closer now and a lot better at understanding what the reseller and SMB market is trying to do, and hopefully we're getting there.
Well, I think, like I said, we'll move the discussion on to the Office 365, and if we've got some time, we'll come back and look specifically at the reseller side of things. But I suppose my comment on it is that typically the infrastructure stuff has, again, revolved around an email and a file and print server. But now with online services, as I said, you've got the opportunity to move into the SharePoint side of things with the consultancy and the business processes. You've got the online communication server. Some of the big positives I've seen with customers using online services is something as simple as, you know, the online presence being able to tell which employees are currently working on their system. So it's partly a matter of just working with the product and understanding it better and how you can implement it within your customers. Again, the thing with IT is the technology moves forward and you need to move forward with your business model as well. So
absolutely. Look, and I think you bring out a really good point there in that, you know, often we're engaged in a conversation at all levels around, look, we just want to get mail migrated. And what that slowly uncovers is that, hey, you know, this IM stuff is actually not just about, you know, kids using Messenger at home. There's value in this, and presence is something that is to me, it's a light bulb moment, you know, when you switch on presence. So I think often, yes, as a partner, you may, you know, as a reseller, you may have been sort of focused on the core business, and this enables you to really expand out your portfolio of skills. But as you say, it's a market pushing a model that perhaps all of us weren't ready for at some point, but we're here now and we need to start moving forward with it.
Exactly. So, all right. So let's turn our attention now to the stuff coming down the pike. Obviously, the online services are now being renamed or rebadged to Office 365, and that brings a whole suite of new functionality, which is very, very exciting, I think, and is going to, you know, entice the product to kick off dramatically. So, do you want to give us a bit of a breakdown of what's the new part of, or what's new with Office 365?
Absolutely. Look, I'd love to. And obviously, this for me is the very exciting part of it, because it is the new coolness as opposed to the old stuff. But I'll caveat everything I say, Robert, with the point that this is still a beta product. And so there are potentially some changes coming down the line, but I'll hope to give you a clearer view as I can as to what the technology consists of and what we aim to deliver when we release later in 2011. But yeah, absolutely. Look, sorry, Office 365. It is BPOS version 2, but that's not a name we sort of refer to it as. It's the evolution of that product. But there's probably three big things that are changing that we need to sort of cover off, I think, around the evolution to Office 365. The first of which is the product lineup itself changes. You know, we introduce some new products, we change some products, and we drop a product. So understanding where that evolves to is key. It's also about some of the changes to the platform. So Office 365 has allowed us to revolutionize and change the touch points, the connection points from a user's perspective and a customer's perspective into the platform, as well as potentially as a reseller and how you might operate in this platform. And lastly, the biggest one, I guess, but probably less important to the SMB market, but certainly the bigger change for us as an organization, is around the licensing model and how we've evolved our typically enterprise agreement type licensing to adopt to and accept the fact that an online purchase, subscription style purchase, needs a different style of licensing. Well, we'll talk about all of those and certainly how that may manifest itself in the SMB space. So if we roll back to the products themselves, the initial release of BPOS was Exchange, SharePoint, Live Meeting, and OCS. For this release of Office 365, the OCS piece has evolved into the new generation product, which is Link Online. And that's not just an evolution product, that does introduce a whole number of new features, which we'll get into. But with that becomes the deprecation of the Live Meeting product. Live Meeting is still available as a technology and can still be purchased independently, but it is no longer included in the Office 365 suite, simply because Link provides all of the functionality that Live Meeting would provide for the size of users that we typically see purchasing Office 365. And then additional product that comes into this, and probably the most confusing from a licensing perspective as to how that will work, is Office Professional Plus. So this is not the Office web apps, although Office web apps are coming into the platform in Office 365. But for those of you that know, Office web apps are actually a part of the SharePoint platform, not the Office platform per se. What we are introducing is the Office Pro Plus product, which is the full desktop product, the Office, you know, Outlook, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote, and so on. Full product to be deployed onto the desktop of machines. So it's a digital download style model. But basically, you know, Office by subscription. Is what that means. And that in itself, you know, really changes, and certainly when you look at the licensing structure, you'll see that really changes the dynamics of how we see people buying our productivity platform. And when we get to a bit of licensing conversation, you'll see how that pans out. But the other piece of that, and sorry, all of those products are, of course, now the 2010 version. So Exchange 2010, SharePoint 2010, Link 2010, and Office 2010. So you're getting all of the new versions of the technology. And as is typical in an online service, that's an evergreen model. So you continue to get that continued version upgrade as they're evolving. But the other big piece is, as I mentioned, the infrastructure, the changes around the platform that mean we can do so much more in terms of the way in which you connect to and utilize the infrastructure. So, and there are many, many of these, and we're not going to get time in this call to go through all of them, but certainly some of the key ones to be aware of. The biggest one is, has always been an issue around sign-in services for us, or single sign-on. You know, in BPOS platform right now, we have a sign-in client that runs on the desktop and provides the bridge between the user's domain-style logon and their login to the online services, the Exchange and SharePoint and Link services. In this new evolution of the platform, we no longer have the sign-in client. What we have is something called a service connector. The service connector runs on machines. It's still a client piece of code that needs to be downloaded to machines, but its now focused role is around ensuring the client platform is ready for the online service. And what that means is it means installing a couple of pieces of code into Outlook to allow Outlook to be able to operate in a online model. And that will support Outlook 2007 and 2010. But probably the bigger piece of that is it enables us to establish a federation model. Now, this is where we certainly at the high end of the market, sort of in the, you know, sort of the 200 seat plus type market, where this really starts to come into value. But there is no limitations. There's no reason why anybody can't adopt the federation model, simply because the moving parts for federation are our online service having a federation capability, which it will in the release of this platform. And on-premise, the customer simply needs to deploy an Active Directory Federation Services platform, which is a free bit of code you can download from Microsoft to install it onto a Windows Server platform. So the base requirement for any customer to do this is to have a Windows Server environment or a server environment they can install it onto and an Active Directory to connect it to. And they can make use of Federation. And Federation is absolutely, I mean, in many ways, for any vendor in the cloud, it's the panacea of all good around sign-on controls, because it means that the users have one identity, they sign in once, the customer continues to manage access control, authentication, authorization locally in their own domain, and that is simply federated to the cloud, where we will extend that and take use of whatever rights you assign users on premise. We can then extend that into cloud, but they're essentially no longer authenticating to the cloud. They are being passed an authentication token by the on-premise service. End user's experience is as clean as it can be. They start up Outlook, they start their machine, they control, alt, delete, log into the machine, and all is good. And when they start up Outlook, there is no prompts, there's no change of connection, there's no client running that does anything funny. It just simply logs them in based on the federation token that is presented to the Exchange server in the cloud on behalf of their on-premise AD. And it really means that process is so much easier for users to adopt and get used to. And of course, the knock-on effect of things like that is simple things like password policy. Well, we no longer have to worry about having a distinct or different password policy in the cloud, because now you're managing your password policies on-premise. They are your password policies. There is no password in the cloud. In addition, it means we can start to layer in things like multi-factor authentication support. We can start throwing in, you know, RSA, VASCO, and two-factor authentication, smart card type authentication, because the Federation Gateway can act as a sort of a gatekeeper, and you can plug in all sorts of authentication models into that. So it really opens up a completely different way of accessing and utilizing the service. And from an administrative perspective, it gives you more control, more security, and as much control as you want to have. From an end user's perspective, it can mean that this platform has little or no impact to their desktop, and there is no management of second sets of credentials or anything else like that. From an administrative perspective, the new platform enables us to really extend out beyond what we have in BPOS right now, which is essentially, when you log into the BPOS service as an administrator, in inverted commas, you are an administrator of the entire service. You can create users, add users, manage users, set SharePoint sites up, delete users. You can do everything. And whilst it's all tracked and audited, it doesn't allow for a very flexible model for roles-based access. So in the new Office 365, we have this capability to do full roles-based access. So you can absolutely, and this is where the reseller partner model could start to come into play, is where customers could actually assign specific roles to partners. And we may see a partner taking on a help desk type role, or a partner taking on a voicemail management type role, or a mail type management role, or a SharePoint management role. But the customer can still segment up the other pieces and say, well, we're still in charge of how our office deployments go. We're still in charge of setting up, you know, Federation or whatever it may be. And you can start to chop and change that. So you can start to allocate the roles more accordingly. As I said, you know, partners, resellers can start to take advantage of that in terms of pushing forward the specific skills they may have in delivering, supporting, or maintaining parts of that infrastructure as it is. And then beyond that, of course, there are some really nice new changes to the interface just to simplify things. I mean, you know, right now, anyone who's seen BPOS knows that we have two or three sites where you may go to: home.microsoftonline, admin.microsoftonline, and mockp.microsoftonline. That all gets consolidated down into a single site, into a single place where a user can flick between their roles as an administrator or somebody who buys the subscriptions and as a physical user of the service, all from within the single console, not losing any of that auditing capability and reporting capability, but really give them the flexibility to do what they need to do without sort of putting in barriers by making them jump between sites and tools and pages. So those are kind of some of the platform things. I mean, you know, what we really, and I'm sure we won't have time to get into, but for each of those four products, these are big products in themselves, Exchange, SharePoint, Link, and Office, there are a whole host of new features that fall underneath each of those products. So, Robert, do you want me to go into each of those products and kind of give you a couple of high points?
Yeah, but what I'll give you one question based on the Federation. I think the Federation is a very important point to cover off at the moment. BPOS, the existing online with Exchange gives you the ability to do some sort of synchronization. I think something to appreciate here with Microsoft strategy is it's basically gives you the ability to do a hybrid, which means you can retain some of your on-site infrastructure as well as do some in the cloud, whereas a lot of other competitors, the only option you've got is to go everything to the cloud, and that brings its own set of problems. So again, this is a good way to look at a transitional way and also to overcome some of the hesitation that customers may have. But I think the Federation, the ability to basically, you know, sync your AD with the cloud is a huge feature. But one of the questions I've got, I suppose, and your feedback on is the Federation, the actual bit you plug into, I mean, is that going to be able to be plugged into a domain controller? So will it run on a domain controller like in a SBS environment where it's got a single server, which is the Active Directory controller? Am I able to install that Federation component on that single server?
It's a great point, and so I'll come back to it, and I'm not avoiding it because it is a difficult question to answer. But I did want to just touch on the other thing you did mention, which is around the hybrid model, because that is a critical point about this, and I should have mentioned it, that functionality that the new platform provides us with is, you know, we have a tagline internally, which is essentially the cloud on your terms, which means that you can absolutely pick and choose your fights in this. You can start to migrate some of your Exchange, but not all of your Exchange, some SharePoint sites, but not all, and so on, without any real cost in terms of technology or performance or functionality. You really can provide a fully rich coexistence experience between the two. So it's a great point, and thanks for bringing that up, Robert. The other point, though, you mentioned around SBS specifically, and how do we handle that single server scenario of being a domain controller? So going in the current platform, there is the directory sync tool that you alluded to, the sync site process that syncs your AD up to the cloud without the Federation piece. And as you know, that right now does not run on a domain controller. It has to run on a domain member server, but not on the domain controller itself. And the reason for that limitation is fundamentally that process is actually built on our ILM technology, ILM V2. And that as a product is built not to run on the Active Directory domain controller. So that is a limitation we have. I want to be perfectly honest with you. With the BPOS platform moving to Office 365, the directory sync process doesn't go away in so much as you still need to sync the directory because you still need an object in the cloud that the cloud can reference. Whilst it doesn't authenticate against it or do anything else with it, it still needs to know that I'm Lee Hicken at Microsoft.com up there as I am Lee Hicken at Microsoft.com on premise, and any changes that happen in one need to be reflected in the other. So that directory sync technology doesn't go away. It still is there, and the current plan, looking at the version of DirSync version 2, has not removed the requirement for this to be not running on a domain controller. So, you know, the short answer to your question is at this stage, it can't run on a domain controller and would require an additional server to run on that. where the Federation Gateway piece is, that's actually, Federation Gateway comes in two parts. There is a proxy server and then the Federation Gateway itself. And what we typically see is the proxy server sitting inside of a customer's DMZ, which is running on any, doesn't really, domain member server, doesn't matter. And then the gateway itself sitting outside on the edge of the network, sitting on the inside of the network, providing that connection between AD and the proxy server, which is sending out to the internet. Now, you don't need to have both of those moving parts. I mean, an ideal best practice deployment would have both of those, but you can get away with simply just having the Active Directory Federation service server. If you're comfortable enough with your network infrastructure to have assured yourself that it's separated enough, your AD is separated enough from the internet. But look, the bottom line of this is in terms of the Office 365 platform, that model of federation is going to require additional services and is going to impact the SPS world. Now, I'm pretty sure you may have done a podcast previously around the new versions of SPS, which are looking to incorporate the online pieces. Is that right, Robert?
Yep, that's correct. We've covered some things with Mark O'Shea, for example, especially around the Aurora product, which is going to be the hybrid model. And that's sort of why I was asking, because the model for Aurora is, again, a single server linked to online services and obviously that's going to be a single server environment, I would think. So again, the question is, obviously, both products, Office 365 and SBS Essentials, as they're calling it now, haven't been released, so we're not sure of the details, but that certainly seems to be a single server model linked to Office 365.
Okay. Well, look, and I want to be, Mark O'Shea is much more the expert in the SBS Aurora product area than I am, so I won't want to second guess him, but I do know that in the inverted commas commercial offering around Office 365, the directory sync product functionality has not changed that much so that it doesn't need to run on another server. So, which I understand, one statement is to say that means that doesn't preclude SPS users from doing it. It just means they have to go and buy another server. But I understand the net impact of that is that kind of divulges some of the value of buying SPS because you're trying to maintain your IT costs to a certain point.
Well, I think that the message that I would take away from it is obviously it's new technology and, there's going to be a learning phase, and with any technology, there are limitations and there are advantages. It's a matter of just being skilled up with a product. So I think, again, you can look at it and say, look, this is a problem and I don't think it's any good. But on the other side, I think the smarter operators, the business operators will say, well, this is a limitation. I understand that. How can I work around it? What do I need to do and the advantages probably for some customers generally outweigh any of the disadvantages, so they go with it. So again, it's just a bit of a knowledge thing for people to be aware of and understand. And that's, again, hopefully we'll be able to get Mark O'Shea back on when the both products have launched and work out how all this works. But it certainly seems as though it will be supported in an SBS world in some way, shape or form. So again, it's just a matter of SBS people being aware of what's around.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you're absolutely right. And I would not be surprised if we go down models of building specific versions of this that are capable of running on the server to support the SBS world. And a lot can change between now and then, but I will point out to you and to listeners is that this problem is not an isolated problem. This is something that's come up many, many times. Hence, the reason why Aurora came into being is, how do we resolve this issue of the multi-server requirements? And some of it we can, and some of it will end up being just, that's the price of that version of technology. Probably we'll be pointing out at that stage, because I'm running this stuff in beta myself now, so I'm having a play of this and I've been testing some of the stuff out. And what the experience of it is like without the Federation piece. So it's probably good to understand a bit about how the infrastructure is set up. So what we've done is we saw what we had in Windows Live, and all of you that have been around Microsoft long enough, you sort of passport.net and evolution into Windows Live platform right now. We saw the value of what the Live platform does in terms of delivering an identity mapping and identity bridging technology between public service, online services, and any private private network service you might have internally. But what we didn't want to do is take the Live platform and just simply extend it open to the online platform, because that introduces all manner of issues around identities being linked from business and work identities and conflicts between people who have one identity in one place and others. I for one have God knows how many Live IDs now from various things I've done in various places. So what we did is we took the good things about Live and we've basically taken that whole platform and repackaged it up and called it MicrosoftOnline.com. So what you'll see as the beta becomes available to you guys later this year is the experience is actually very, very similar to a live experience. You know, if you're used to signing into live, the live platform, in so much as you can obviously, you log into it and it can remember credentials and store credentials for you and store them in just the same way as your live credentials might get stored on your machine. Now, I understand the issues around, concerns around, well, caching credentials and security and so on, but it does mean that you can actually have a very fluid experience whereby I right now I log into my Outlook and it logs into my online live my online service, my on-premise Microsoft mailbox, my home IINet one, my Hotmail one, all of these networks, all these mailboxes logged in. I'm not prompted for many authentications because I've asked it to remember my live credentials, my online credentials. So the experience isn't completely painful. It's not like you're getting popped up all the time and all these other things are happening, but it does, you know, there is that sort of one-off, I have to log in with my live credentials, my live-like credentials, but it's not that painful experience. So there are going to be those customers that, you know, sort of weigh up the risk versus effort of going into a federation versus the live linked type model and may choose to go either way, but it's certainly not that painful, but it is not as fluid as a federation model, without a doubt.
So, look, I think it's we'll move on because we don't want to dwell on it. But I think, again, it's just a matter of learning about the thing and understanding it rather than seeing it as a roadblock. And, again, it's up to you how you choose it. But, again, it's just a matter of being aware of it. So what I might do, you spoke about the functionality of the new products, and obviously there's so many products that have come up and there's so many new features that we just haven't got time to go into it. But based on, you know, my great love of SharePoint, I would take SharePoint as the example. So my understanding is that basically at the moment in the online services that's currently provided is it's effectively very similar to Windows SharePoint services version 3. Now, when it moves to Office 365, effectively SharePoint moves to the enterprise version, which means that you'll have things like Access services, Visio services, Excel services, Form services, My Sites. So effectively, rather than being, for example, if you were to buy the SBS in-house version, you get SharePoint Foundation 2010 with obviously its limitations. But if you move to the same thing in the cloud with the Office 365 and, you know, the single or the one license at a time, you're effectively getting access to an enterprise-level software product, which for a small business, for example, would never have the opportunity to get access to. So I see this as being one of the big advantages of moving to the Office 365. You're getting effectively the enterprise versions of all these products going forward for on a single license usage. I mean, is that sort of a correct assumption?
No, look, that's absolutely spot on. I mean, I'm looking at my list of things I was talking about with SharePoint, and you've just covered all of them, Robert, so I don't have to talk about that anymore. In terms of the features, absolutely. I mean, the kind of features you talk about in SharePoint around, you know, My Sites and all the enterprise style functionality, yes, that does get rolled into it, as it does across many of the other products as well. And it does enable you, as you say, from an SBS or a small business model, to get access to some of those features that just would have been way out of the reach just in terms of the initial costs of deployment. But what it also means in addition is, and this is where we sort of almost touch it a little bit on the licensing model, is there are a number of different license types now that enable you to pick and choose the types of functionality. So, for example, you know, it may not be a great example, but something like My Sites, for example, actually a better one is like Excel services. You know, not everybody in your organization is going to need to get access to Excel services. Maybe a small percentage of them do. The new model enables you to be flexible about which licenses you want to buy. So, you know, you could find yourself in a scenario where 200-man organization and you're buying 100 licenses of the what we call the E3 license, and I'll explain the licensing shortly, but to get you the enterprise level access to SharePoint and give you Excel services in there. And then for everyone else, you might simply need to be buying a very basic E1 SKU or even what is the evolution of deskless worker type licensing, the kiosk type licensing, because they don't even need to access any of that stuff. They just need to have a web mailbox. But the beauty of Office 365 is, in conjunction with some of our licensing models, is that you can really just be specific and pick and choose what you want. So where you need enterprise licensed functionality, get it, pay for it by subscription, and that's all you pay for. But don't pay for it across the board as you would typically have had to do if you're buying it sort of for an on-premise deployment.
Okay, so again, I think we can probably move into the licensing a little bit, but I suppose, again, for a summary, the way that I see it is, in a lot of cases, it's giving smaller businesses, or giving everybody, but, you know, it's people who necessarily don't have access to things like volume licensing, to be able to get, you know, the subscription model for Office to get access to the latest versions when they become available. Again, it's a volume licensing model that potentially wasn't available right down to a single user entity. So obviously there's a number of SKUs and a number of different options, but I see that as a huge benefit and another selling point for the online services. You can go to a customer and say, well, guess what? You know, you've got access to, if you choose the right license, you know, the latest version of, you know, SharePoint, Exchange, but also if you go with the licensing, you can get the Office on the desktop as well. So again, I think that's the big advantage I see of the licensing. But you know, is there anything more specific that you want to let people know about?
Well, there's a couple of things around the products that I just want to bring out, because there are some pretty significant changes. But certainly we'll get into licensing, because that is an important aspect of how you might be looking to put this together for a customer. But look, so in terms of the products, your SharePoint, I think you pretty much well covered that in terms of the new function. It rolls into that product across the board. In the Exchange world, moving to Exchange 2010, you get all of the features that 2010 brings with it. So sort of the other niceties of things like mail tips and so on in terms of email experience. But also now this enables us to switch on some fairly core features such as voicemail. So in unified messaging, so having voicemail delivered to your inbox is now something we can deliver through the Exchange Online platform. And that's independent of voice services, full voice through link and all of that sort of technology. That's a separate license type, which we'll get into, but voicemail to the inbox is something we can switch on. In addition though, we also have historically had a product called Exchange Hosted Archiving, which is our cloud-based archiving solution, which is platform independent. You can use it with any technology. We still have that, and we'll continue to have that going forward. But in the Office 365 release, what we'll have is something built into Exchange itself, which is essentially the integrated personal archiving functionality, which is something that 2010 delivers as a platform on-premise. We'll offer that in the cloud. That gives you individual personal archives for users with the ability to go up to unlimited storage for those archives, and also wrap into that functions like retention policies and legal hold and all of the things you want to see in a mail archiving service. So what it really means is that where we've had some issues before where Exchange Hosted Archiving is sold separately to BPOS, and whilst it's as integrated as any other platform, it's sold separately and managed separately and sort of maintained in a different way. That's now fully rolled into the Exchange experience. So an Exchange administrator can have the ability to manage the archive side of things as well as the pure Exchange side of things. In the link side of things, you know, with OCS as it stands right now in BPOS, it was fundamentally focused on instant messaging and presence. That really goes much wider in Link, where we certainly move all the IM and presence functionality to full internet capability. We had some limitations in the past around firewall traversal. We've got the full ability to do global address list and skills search, and skills search is a new feature of SharePoint, but also a new feature of Link that we introduce. And the multi-party, many party video conferencing, voice conferencing that was previously enjoyed through live meeting is now all delivered through the Link technology. Plus, we now introduce things like Federation into the Windows Live platform and into other Link customers and OCS customers. So, you know, anyone on BPOS can now federate themselves with anyone else on that platform or in the live meeting platform. So a whole bunch of new features coming to that, setting aside the whole voice piece, which is a layer on top of that around voice technology. Mm. And the last one, Robert, is Office. You know, Microsoft Office is now a part of this platform, and that is the full Office Pro Plus product. And the way that's going to work is, and this is probably a reasonably nice way to segue into licensing, but the Office product is a part of one of the license SKUs. So if we think in terms of the licensing being, you know, from an enterprise style licensing, we have E1 through to E5, I think they are, but there's various steps of licensing. At one of those license points, you get access to Office for a desktop subscription style approach. It means that person can then click to download Office and get the click to run version of Office on that machine, and they're able to deploy that onto up to 5 machines under the terms of the licensing. So it's sort of pay as you go per user licensing for deployment on 5 machines, and they get the full Office experience. Now, what's really interesting when you look at the licensing model though is that's actually the next step up from Office web apps. In so much as, you know, if you look at that, what it means is that we're seeing that we're probably going to see more people adopt Office web apps as their primary mechanism of accessing the Office platform. And then the Office suite itself will be for those heavy sort of desk-based, you know, IT workers that really generate content and build content. But most of the consumers in most organizations, and if you think about most organizations, it's typically an 80-20 split between consumers and creators of content. The consumers can now really look to office web apps as their primary model of accessing this. They can still go to the Office license if they want to, and this doesn't preclude users from having OEM versions of Office or anything else on machines, of course, but it is just another way to get access to that Office licensing. And from an administrative perspective, once that user no longer needs Office or has left the organization, it's simply an untick of the box in the admin GUI, and that license, that version of Office that user has on that machine is now orphaned, and they are required to license it themselves. You know, so if they leave the company, they can take Office with them, but they've got to go and get their own license. But the organization can then take that copy and that license and just reassign it somewhere else. Very flexible, very easy to administer model for managing Office deployments, as well as all of the back-end Exchange, SharePoint, and server-side components of this.
Is there a home usage rights available with that Office?
There is, in so much as they get the ability to deploy five machines, and you know the expectation is that will be a home usage right in itself, that they can take that and deploy it on there. Whether or not that takes away from the traditional home usage rights that's incorporated in the overall EA license, I don't know at this stage. But certainly for anyone that uses Office under the subscription model of BPOS or Office 365, they will have inferred home usage rights.
Okay. Well, again, there's another big benefit.
Tremendous payment. Absolutely, yeah. Look, the Office is a really big change. I mean, you've got to think about how big Office is as a revenue stream to Microsoft, and how big it is as a piece of our heritage. For us to start changing the way we deliver Office is huge. And of course, I think, again, you've probably had a session with Jeff around Windows Intune as well. So you know the changes that Windows Intune is bringing to the systems management and Windows client licensing as well. So yeah, tremendous change underway, and really. Really giving users a lot of flexibility and choice in how they might want to access the platform.
And that Intune part was actually next on the list here. Can you speak to the Intune as its potential integration with Office 365? Is that something we are likely to see become involved? And obviously, if you can give us a bit of a brief idea of what Intune is for those that may not be aware of it.
Okay, I can certainly give you a bit of a brief on what Intune is, but I'm by no means an expert in that product. But in terms of its integration into BPOS or Office 365, at this stage, that is a non-committed fact. We're making no plans in that sense. It would make some logical sense in versions to come, but certainly it's nothing we're committing to on paper around how the two will work together. But for those of you that don't know too much about Windows Intune, it is, in a nutshell, it is the ability to, it's a cloud-based service to manage, maintain, and monitor your Windows client infrastructure. So it provides, it's kind of like a system center type tool set, but running in the cloud, managing Windows desktops. But in addition to that, it also affords you the ability to essentially acquire a Windows Enterprise license, desktop license for that machine. So each Windows Intune license entitles you to Windows 7 Enterprise on the desktop that you're managing as well. So it really does, if we think in terms of that, that's System Center, that's Office, that's Windows, and that's our core business productivity platform, all now being able to be delivered in some way as a subscription style product. That is really the changing of the tanker here in Microsoft, the turning of the tanker here in Microsoft, because that's everything that is critical to us is moving into, no longer a box product, buy it off the shelf and pay the money. It's turning into buy what you need when you need it. So it's a huge change.
Well, I think also too, again, it comes back to the reseller angle. It's a case of that you can look at it as, some people would say as eating into the traditional market, but, again, the old lemonade statement is well, this may open an opportunity to so many other customers who are willing to take this on board or who you may never have been able to work with before. So again, if you're more S than M, this might give you an opportunity to move up into the medium space and obviously support more desktops and support larger organizations and roll out your skills around this product where that may not have been possible. Something that you were doing before. So I think there's see it as an opportunity.
Absolutely. Look, and actually you bring out a good point there, Robert, which is something we realized and we recognized in BPOS was, I think, in the BPOS product, we brought the shutters down a bit too far in terms of what you can and can't manage. We would position it as being highly, highly configurable, but completely uncustomizable. What we discover with Office 365 is that there are those that want to take the platform on and just simply consume an out-of-the-box product and they pay the minimum price for it and away they go. And those are the kind of customers that, in reality, are not going to be huge revenue churn models for partners anyway. Because these are customers that just simply want the very basic features and that's all they want. But then there are those customers that still wanted to have, and those people, organizations, that needed to have that level of customization, configuration, control. So in Office 365, we basically lifted up the doors again, opened our kimonos up, and there is a raft of functionality, configurational capabilities in the product now. So such that, you know, to give a trite example, in the exchange world now, transport rules, configuration of UM dial plans, active sync policies, all of those things are now exposed to customers if they want to access them and use them, whereas they previously in BPOS weren't natively exposed to you. Now, that means that as a partner, you have an ability now to continue to deliver the great skills you have around our platform. You know how to configure and manage Exchange. You can continue to do that for customers that want to do that. But for those customers that you had in your portfolio that were just simply consuming the very basic technology and the basic basic needs, they can become somewhat more of a, like, give you the same level of service, have the great functionality of Office 365, but we'll let Microsoft manage you because Microsoft's invested in that support and model and everything else to manage that. But for the customers that I really want to drive a lot of value into because they want a lot of my time and my effort and my skills, I can now focus my time on that. And and the platform now gives you the tool sets to be that person, to be that administrator to that level. Whereas before you might have had to, be raising service requests or trying to fight Microsoft support to figure out an answer to something.
And I think to me the key thing here is and what I've looked at, from what I've seen of Office 365, I think that, for people who like tinkering, who like, modifying Exchange and like being able to set their, their own configuration exactly the way they want it for their customer, I think that Office 365 provides that functionality, such at a greater level than the existing BPOS does. But I think the key to it is that you need to know PowerShell. A lot of these low-level commands, a lot of this functionality, a lot of this configuration needs to be done through PowerShell. And again, this is something, with my experience, that most people in the SMB or the SBS space are not up to speed well enough with PowerShell. So again, part of the thing that they need to look at, besides the functionality and what it can provide, is they also, from what I would understand, is they need to skill up much more on PowerShell. I mean, would you agree with that?
Look, PowerShell absolutely does continue to form a big part of the platform. Unlike most of the Microsoft products of the new generation now, you'll find that there's all the UI is available there too. You can log into the web UI and access all this kind of stuff. But PowerShell is really where you can kind of do it in bulk and perform and in a productive way. I mean, you would the UI is there for individual changes. The PowerShell is there to do mass management and configuration change. So absolutely, PowerShell is a critical part of it. But for those of you that haven't got the skills in that, there is still a fallback for you. But take Robert's advice, and PowerShell is going to become a big part of what you need to be able to do to continue managing cloud. Particularly as you want to manage more and more customers, PowerShell is going to give you that flexibility to do that in a very pragmatic way.
Well, again, the investment you make in PowerShell is going to pay off online, but also on premises. So again, it's one of those technologies that Microsoft's moving towards. It gives you a lot more functionality. It gives you the ability to roll things out in a consistent manner, to do the scripts and all that sort of stuff, and borrow from other people who do the scripts. So again, I think it's something that everybody, all the techie people need to get right involved with. And in some ways, it's not very different from the batch files and things they used to do back in the good old days. So I think that for the person that really wants to get to the technical level and really do that sort of configuration, PowerShell is something that they need to obviously invest their time and effort in.
Absolutely. And in addition to PowerShell, because as you say, PowerShell isn't a leap away from sort of, using scripts and so on, and even Visual Basic or anything, something like that. What is essentially new, but not necessarily that new, is the new platform web services. So we're moving Exchange and SharePoint and all the technologies to a web service API, not a MAPI API. And that platform web service, we're introducing a whole bunch of new layers into that in the new Office 365 to allow third-party applications and other technologies to interface to the online service without having to go through all the issues of the user authentication process. So basically providing a proper web service managed programmable web service API. So for those of you that are in the development side of things, and you build apps and you build out connection points and sort of fill in the gaps between Microsoft and other products, web services is going to become your new friend.
Okay, that's great. So we're approaching the end of our time here, Lee. So what we might do is just wrap up with two things. Sure. So the first question I've got for you is, when's Office 365 going to be available? When can we get our hands on it and start cutting our teeth, so to speak, on the product?
The million-dollar question, huh? Oh, it seems like my line's cut out.
No, not quite.
So look, the current plan of record is that we aim to have a full beta availability and a test availability for Australia across the world around April time this year. with a release of the product coming sometime after that. And at this stage, we don't have a fixed date, but we're looking at it being sort of this half of 2011. So read into that what you will. But certainly the most important thing for you to look at right now is that there will be you will be able to get your hands on the product in and around April time of this year. And everyone across Australia. And previously, you know, we've had some issues where Australia wasn't part of the initial beta for Office 365. They are going to be part of the second wave beta in April.
And the other obvious thing is that people who are already on the BPOS platform will get the opportunity to be rolled across directly into Office 365 when it becomes available?
They will. So if you're currently using BPOS, you will, as the platform becomes available, you will get the invite email to say, hey, you're ready to be migrated. Would you like to be migrated? That migration process will be essentially seamless from a user's perspective. Mail will certainly just migrate across. For SharePoint, there is some discussion at the moment around whether we will provide some sort of guidance for users to maybe take a backup of SharePoint sites before we do the migration, as you would do on-premise, to be honest with you, as you would do normally, before we do the migration, and then you do the testing to see if it survives in SharePoint 2010 as you expect it to be. And if not, you've always got your backup copy. But fundamentally, it should be a non-user interactive experience, and there will be some administrative work for the back-end guys to do, but we'll do all the actual work itself of the physical migration itself.
Okay, so the other question I've got for you is if you want to get up to speed on the product from a customer's point of view, so if you want more information about Office 365, where do they go? And if you're a reseller looking to skill yourself up in the product so you can get it to your customers or for yourself, how do we go about that?
Okay, so there's a few resources that we can point you to. And I guess, Robert, what I may do is send you some links to put into the show notes when you post this up.
Sure.
But there is the sort of the core public-facing internet site is www.office365.com, which is nice and straightforward. That's suitable for resellers, partners, for customers, for anyone engaging in the business. There is a specific portal inside of there for you to drill into. And that will take you down and give you the information you need around the product itself, what's coming, and what were the core features. The other links that I'll provide you to with Robert are, for those of you familiar with the old BPOS product, I shouldn't say old, it's still available, with the BPOS product, we had a set of documents called the service descriptions, which were fairly detailed documents for each of the products that explained everything about the platform, what it did, what it didn't do, and did a feature matrix against what you can get on-premise versus what you can get in the cloud. We have the same set of documents for Office 365, and they're available on the public internet site. They're just tagged as beta, so you understand they're still, you know, subject to change. But I'll get you the link to that, Robert, because I think that's something that's a really valuable point from understanding the technology of the product.
Yeah, there's four or five documents there which I've gone through, and they
partner,
give you a
as a reseller in the space. Yeah, you've got that. There's also another document that goes with those, which is the kind of the business value doc, which is a sort of a more high-level, fluffy, you know, why go Office 365, which, again, is probably worthwhile having. But for partners and resellers, for those of you that, and I'm making an assumption here that you would be at the very least a registered Microsoft partner. I forget the new terminology now as we change the partner program. But that gives you the ability to log into partner.microsoft.com and drill into that. And inside of partner.microsoft.com, underneath the Office 365 or online services tag, as it is, I think in the menu, there is a ton of documentation in there. Most of it is considered at this stage to be either partner confidential or you know, a sort of partner NDA specific. But go in there. There are presentations, technical presentations, sales presentations. There is white papers and guidelines. A whole bunch of documents on the products themselves and the functionality of the technology and what we're going to deliver. Again, all of it tagged as beta because we're still in that stage, but there is a wealth of information on the partner website. But for my money, if I was looking to learn a bit more about this, I would probably start with the service descriptions. They're there to me, give you the real nuts and bolts of what you can and can't do.
Excellent. Okay, so to round it all off, Lee, can you give the listeners out there some information about how they can get in contact with you if they've got further questions, or you know, how they can follow you, and you know, if you've got a blog, or what's the best place to keep up with the online services from that point of view if they're Microsoft partners?
Yep. No, we do. Well, we do have an online blog. We have a Twitter feed and a Facebook page, and all of it is tagged as MS Online. So it's facebook.com/MS Online. It's twitter.com/MS Online. It's blogs, TechNet blogs /MS Online. And that's the official company-wide, industry-wide blog about the MS Online service. And you'll see everything in there from oops, we had an outage, to, hey, here's a cool new feature, and Office 365 included. For me personally, if you want to get hold of me, I'm happy to have my email address. Millions of people have it already, but it's quite simply lhickin@microsoft.com. And please feel free to throw questions at me. If I don't know the answer, I'll tell you. And if there's a better way for you to get the answer, I'll tell you that as well. But I'm more than happy to take direct conversations on.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think we'll wrap it up for the day and obviously let everybody get back to what's left of the Christmas cheer and the new year. We thank Lee very much for his time and the information that he's given us today. And like I said, hopefully that when Office 365 does launch, we can call on you again to come on and give us all the good news and let us know exactly what the product involves and where it's going to move forward from there. So once again, many thanks for your time today, Lee.
No, not a problem. More than happy to do it, Robert. Thanks for the time to come and talk, and Merry Christmas or Happy New Year to everybody listening.
Thank you very much. And that's all for this episode of the Need to Know podcast from the CIOps. Look out for more episodes shortly. Thanks for listening. This podcast has been brought to you by the SharePoint Operations Guide. For more information, visit www.wssops.com. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.